You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, brought to you by iWoka, flexible loans built for small businesses, iwoka.co.uk. Today, we're in La Planche des Belles Filles.
I'm just a kid from Slovenia. I don't know what to say.
Well.
That was the voice of the Tour de France champion elect. Just a kid from Slovenia with a brother, two sisters, two arms, two legs.
Having fun.
And a decent advantage now over Primož Roglič. I mean, we did not see that coming, did we?
No. I did.
Well,
you did.
I thought you were joking all week. I thought you were joking.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the first stats, you know, he won on the first Sunday, second Sunday, and I said he would win in the if he wins in the third Sunday,
today
then he wins
Saturday.
The Tour. Yeah, but he'll probably have won on Sunday, definitely the Tour de France, which is not bad. So I mean, the statistics, I mean, figures, you know, pointed that
you can't
way.
Can't argue with that, can you?
No. Yeah. No, but yeah. The other thing was that at the time, I didn't believe in it in the last couple of days, but I did believe in it, you know, like a week ago, because he seemed to have just a little bit of edge over Roglic in the mountains. Every time he was climbing, he was, you know, won two stages to Roglic one at that stage. And I had the impression he had this little bit extra kick. And also, as we said throughout the tour, Jumbo-Visma were probably doing it maybe too methodically, whereas he did it on, you know, on instinct, probably more on instinct than...
Well, it looked like that in the time trial, but we're getting ahead of ourselves here, aren't we? We should tell people what happened?
Well, here we go. Stage 20 from Lure to La Planche des Belles Filles, 36.2 kilometres, the only time trial of the Tour, and it threw up the most dramatic conclusion to the race since 1989. Well, we'll debate that, but in my opinion anyway. Tadej Pogačar turned a 57-second deficit into a 59-second victory with a blistering win in the time trial. He also swept the polka dot jersey as King of the Mountains and the white jersey as best young rider and became the first debutant to win the Tour since Laurent Fignon in 1983, joining an elite list that includes the greats of the sport, Coppi, Coblet, Anquetil, Gimondi, Merckx, Eno. Pogačar was up on Roglic right from the start. The first meaningful time checks showed that he'd eaten a quarter of his fellow Slovenian's advantage pretty early on, and things swung in his direction all the way up the climb, and in the end it was comprehensive, an absolute thrashing. Pogačar won the stage ahead of Jumbo-Visma's, well, the wrong man really, although even Tom Dumoulin's performance wouldn't have been enough. Dumoulin was at 121, as was Richie Port in third, a fantastic ride by the Tasmanian. Wout van Aert was a further 10 seconds back, then came Roglic at 156 and Remy Cavagna at 159, and Cavagna had been the long-time leader until Van Aert and then Dumoulin took over in the hot seat. And the look on the two Jumbo-Visma riders' faces as they watched Pogačar demolish their teammate on the climb really said it all. Francois, you said in the car it was the picture of the Tour. Once Pogačar had crossed the line, and Roglic must have known by that stage that the Tour had gone, it was impossible. You'd have had to have a heart of stone not to feel for him. His helmet slipped back on his head a bit, and for the first time he looked a bit like a ski jumper converted to a cyclist. It was it was a derobing, wasn't it, by Pogačar. The fact that Roglic went over to his young compatriot to congratulate him spoke volumes for him, though, I would say. The King of the Mountain jersey also went to Pog, as Carapaz was unable to score any points on the climb. So, Tadej Pogačar, the Tour de France champion in waiting. Francois, you nicknamed Mark Hirschi Baby Spartacus, but what do we call Pog? The baby cannibal?
I don't know. Yeah, baby cannibal. It might be. Well, it's a little bit early to say so, but I must say, as a boomer, I'm scared by these kids, you know. Every year produces a younger Tour de France winner, and it was even better than the previous one, and it goes so fast, you know. It's like a kind of a mutation, you know. Can you imagine a 21-year-old kid beating Tom Dumoulin in the time trial by 113, nearly 121, and Richie Port as well, and beating Roglic? I mean, we'll discuss whether Roglic had a bad day or not, but I mean, he finished fifth in the Tour de Final time frame, the Tour de France, not so far away from actually from Dumoulin and Port, and this 21-year kid comes and beat these guys by 130. What next? You know, next year we have Remco Evenepoel beating Pog by 2 minutes.
Pog will be yesterday's man.
Well, to be fair, he is getting on a bit. He's 22 on Monday.
He's looking over his shoulder.
Yeah,
he will be looking over his shoulder.
What else? There are a few other little bits and pieces from what was a thrilling day's racing. Richie Port won the battle for third. I can eat a bit of humble pie here because I got that completely wrong. It was a brilliant ride by Port. Miguel Angel Lopez of Astana had a bit of a shocker and slipped off the podium to sixth place. Port makes it onto the podium in his last Grand Tour for Trek Segafredo. That means that Mikel Landa's fourth, Enric Mas is fifth. Dumoulin moved up a couple of places to seventh. Then come Uran and Adam Yates. Damiano Caruso snuck into the top 10 as Valverde slipped away. But really, today was all about today.
Oh, see what you did there.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWoka. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWoka. If you run a small business, find out more at iwoka.co.uk. iwoka.co.uk.
Thank you to iWoka, our title sponsor. Their support enables us to be here. Where are we actually, Lionel?
Well, we're having our traditional kebab meal in or around Lure. All the restaurants are full. There aren't very many restaurants to choose from, but the one over the road is full. So we're outside a kebab
shop.
We
thought we struck gold, didn't we, in this little new town for us. Where are we, Francois?
We're in Luxeuil-les-Bains. It's a kind of a spa town. And, it's obviously it's not the season for spas, and so not many bars open in the town tonight, and all the young guys from the area and girls all flock in the two same spots, and we were kind of kicked out of those
places. Were consigned to this lovely spot here, but it's fine, we'll make the best of it. Thanks again to iWoka. If you run a small business and you want to find out what iWoka can do for you, go to iwoka.co.uk and have a look at their reviews on Trustpilot as well. They've got outstanding reviews there. Now, let's hear a little bit from the Pog conference and a bit from Pog and a bit from Rog after their performances today.
It really seemed that it's finished, that we just need to survive time trial. But then in the end, I had a really good day and he had a little bit worse day probably. I don't know what happened, but... Yeah, I was already thinking about second place after Korda lose. Actually, that was the day when I was just solid on second. I wanted to secure my second, and then today was incredible. I feel him. I feel his loss because he had to lose the yellow jersey on the last hard day. It's really, really difficult, and I know how he feels. That's the racing. In the race, we all try to win. I'm just a kid from Slovenia with a. Two sisters, one brother, I don't know what to say. I like to have fun. I like to enjoy the life, in the little things. So this press conference is too big for me. So I don't know what to say about me actually.
For sure, I feel sorry, definitely for all the guys and everyone, because I didn't really do for a purpose this today, and I was really fighting to do also my best every day together with them. Still I'm really really proud on them and on the whole performance and the show that we showed here in the past few weeks. It's not really what I wanted. I'm also really emotional about it. But on the other hand, it was how it was. I would wanted to be a little different, but I cannot change it. I just need to go on.
Well, that was Pog, and well, we had Pog and then Rog in the press conference, and I wouldn't say that we sort of learned an awful lot about either of them. They're both quite self-contained, but with Pogacar, who said that he found it quite overwhelming, the press conference, you could see that there is his personality starting to emerge a little bit. And Roglic too said that he'd cried afterwards, and he was upset, and he was very dignified, and I thought very, very gracious in his response to Pogacar. But let's talk about the stage, because a time trial at this point in the race is always a gamble. That there was, and I think none of us had particularly high expectations for this one. It was one of those ones where it could have been that the race could have still been on a knife edge, and it could have been a really exciting finale to the tour. We didn't think it was going to be that. We thought it was kind of settled. The real interest was in the battle for the podium, where we felt again, Richie Porte had an outside chance of leapfrogging Miguel Angel Lopez.
Yeah, you guys did. I
thought that was a good.
With the severity of the climb, the climbers would do better.
I mean, Richie Porte's not a bad climber.
I know. I just thought he wasn't as good a climber as Lopez.
He's been climbing quite well. But it wasn't that much of a surprise to see Lopez fall apart and Richie Porte put in a strong performance. But again, everything was exaggerated, and I think that was really the story of the day. This was such a tough test. Everything was exaggerated and amplified. And a bad day today was a disaster. And a good day today, you could really cash in your chips. And Richie Porte did that, and Pogacar did that. And the margins between them wouldn't have been that great. I made a comment on Twitter about comparisons with 89, because, of course, that finished with a time trial on the Sunday. But it was a downhill time trial, really, into Paris. And what was surprising there was the scale of Fignon's collapse and the fact that Le Mans was able to turn that deficit to his advantage. This was a very different sort of test. And I think, had we been talking today about a 20-kilometre time trial into Paris, we wouldn't have seen the upsets that we saw. It was the nature of the test that really created these incredible upsets. And the margin between Pogacar and Roglic wasn't that big, but the nature of the test was such that it was enough.
I agree. I couldn't agree more, because I as you know, being an old man, I was there on the Sunday when Greg LeMond beat Fignon by 8 seconds on the Champs-Élysées. And I think it was even more stunning at the time, because it was the last day. We really didn't expect that at all. And because the margin was so narrow, 8 seconds, last day, everybody had written their stories about it. Even Greg couldn't believe it. I mean, it was probably even more of a shocker than this. This time, also the reason why this happened, I mean, there had been a real up and down fight between Fignon and LeMond at the time, each taking the jersey in turn. In spite of his class and winning two stages, Tadej Pogacar had never been in the yellow jersey. It had seemed like Movistar were running the show pretty well. We'll probably talk about did they do it a little bit too well, and maybe they should have killed the race earlier, and they seemed like they have the means to do that, and they thought that probably 57 seconds was enough, but it wasn't. But more, and in the case of Fignon, it was a real bad day for Fignon. He was injured, he had saddle problems, and it was more than the performance of Le Mans, which was obviously excellent. It was more like the downfall of Fignon. Today, in spite of what everybody says, and I think that's the general opinion. Local scooterists. I didn't see that was really a total decay by Roglic. It was more an extraordinary performance by Pogacar. I never said that in my many years in cycling. I haven't seen that many of that caliber. I mean, Chris Froome, overturning the Giro was one of those, and this was absolutely stunning. The to say Roglic didn't have a good day or didn't ride a good time trial today would be in a way downgrading Pogacar's performance, which is one of the most unbelievable athletic feats I've seen on a bike in my career as a cycling journalist.
I kind of disagree with both of you there, because Pogacar trounced everybody.
Yeah. And so that's the main thing.
No,
for me.
But
that's
no
what
one.
It trounced everybody.
Nobody was talking really in serious terms about this being on this morning or yesterday. In 1989, people were thinking maybe if Le Mans can possibly get up early. I even when it was a 13-second sort of, you know, a quarter of that deficit nibbled away on the opening part of the course today.
But maybe what was more spectacular at the time is you had two former Tour de France champions battling out. Maybe the effect of surprise is greater this time. But I mean, you know, it was Fignon Le Mans.
But also there was an equipment factor in 89. Yeah. Le Mans had the tri-bars, the aero helmet.
And the fact it was close, I completely get that. But I mean, today was just stunning in the fact that it was not on this morning. Sure. I mean, UAE Team Emirates will clearly have thought there was a chance. Everyone in Pogacar's position might have thought, well, there is a chance, but I just didn't give it any real credible thought until they were on the road.
That's what I'm saying.
I agree.
Insist on that. Yeah. What's absolutely extraordinary is not Roglic fading a bit. It's let's keep the feet where it is. Pogacar was absolutely unbelievable today. He produced one of the most stunning cycling performances ever, in my opinion.
I thought you were saying, I thought your first point was that you didn't think that it was...
Oh no, I think just the nature of the course created the possibility for what happened today, because, Pogacar's performance was absolutely incredible, but he wouldn't have been able to gain the advantage that he did on a less difficult course. So it was all about the course today, and I mean, he put in an incredible performance, but he was only able to get the gap that he was able to get because it was such a difficult course.
Absolutely. And I also think Roglic faded the way he did because the Pogacar's performance was so stunning that he himself was stunned.
But I think
every mile he was getting clear in his mind that he was losing it, and then it's a vicious circle. You know, your legs get stiffer, your mind gets rambling, and I think that what affected his Roglic's performance is more than anything else, more than a bad day or a physical letdown, was actually Pogacar's stunning performance.
And I think you could see it in Roglic's performance unfolding in real time. I mean, early in the stage, when they were still racing along the flat, we got this time check through that Roglic was 13 seconds down. And there was no panic, there weren't alarm bells ringing at that point, but Roglic, in contrast to Pogacar, actually was getting time checks. Pogacar says he couldn't hear the time checks, but Roglic knew throughout what the time checks were, and you could see a sense of panic, and because he started fighting, it looked like he was fighting his bike a bit harder. He was going harder. It was playing in his head clearly, and he was fighting it. And I think that's what he said at the end. He was up the climb. He was fighting every meter, and it wasn't a Roglic style performance at all. And you said, Lionel, afterwards that you bet Roglic wishes he could just wake up and do it again, because everything went wrong for him. And he still finished fifth on the stage, but Fignon still finished third on the final stage in 1989. You know, these guys are still capable of great athletic performances, but for Roglic it was a total disaster. For Roglic, he cracked.
And yet, if you'd said to Roglic this morning at breakfast, you'll finish 35 seconds behind Tom Dumoulin, he would have thought, well, I'm going to win the Tour then. Roglic's performance wasn't that bad. Yes, he did crack. Yes, he kind of wobbled. He didn't get back on top of it when he knew that things were slipping away. And as you say, Francois, that's where it became critical, because when he started to have to try and make up ground and he knew that it was slipping away, that's when he became more ragged.
But
if you said to him this morning, you'll concede half a minute to Dumoulin, you would have bet 99 times out of 100 that would be enough.
We agree on that. I insist on the fact that in my opinion, Roglic didn't fade that badly. You know, once again, Pogacar not only beat Roglic, he beat the whole Jumbo-Visma team by himself. If you look at the stage standings, you know, Dumoulin, is second. Wood van Aert is what, fourth, I think. And Roglic is fifth. I mean, what a team! They're all up there, but they've been beaten by the best guy, who's on his own with the team, reduced to cut down to five guys, with only De La Cruz actually who really helped him out in the last week in the mountains and in hard times. This young kid is just better than the whole Jumbo-Visma team, which is now the leading team in the peloton. Well, what can you say? You know, chapeau.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast Team Car, the back of the pack, please.
Thank you to the Watt Bike Atom for sponsoring all of our Tour de France coverage this year. We've nearly made it to Paris, Richard.
We're almost there. That's right. Earlier in the series, we mentioned how easy it is to connect the Watt Bike Atom to a whole host of training apps. But if you're thinking of buying a Watt Bike for the first time and are unsure where to start, Watt Bike is offering free extended trials to a number of training apps, including the Sufferfest, Full Gas, Trainer Road and Training Peaks, and they're working on adding some more trial offers in the coming weeks.
Now, Trainer Road's an app that we've got a lot of experience with, isn't it, Richard, when we did the Trainer Road Challenge? And the best thing about the Watt Bike Atom is you turn it on and you pair it up with your favourite app straight away. And it's great that if somebody buys a Watt Bike, they can see all of these different types of app and see which one suits their needs best. The next generation Watt Bike Atom is now available to buy from £90 per month. See wattbike.com. That's wattbike.com for more information.
I mean, I think the question is, Francois, as you say, what could and should Jumbo-Visma have done more or better? I mean, a couple of days ago, we released our penultimate commentary. Was it our penultimate or our...
Well, they gave
the one
them
before our penultimate one.
Yeah. They were all yellow.
It was about Jumbo-Visma. We thought they were going to win the Tour de France, and it was titled They Were All Yellow.
And they were all yellow.
We're switching the emphasis to were on the title of that. Everybody pretty much thought that it was a done deal. Roglic was going to win yellow. But the one thing is that they haven't, for all their strength as a team, they did not manage to kill off Pogacar. And, you know, lots of comparisons with Team Sky, Team Ineos. They were always able to kill off opponents. I don't know if they could have ridden it a different way, or if this just speaks to Pogacar's incredible ability. But he was a limpet. They could not shake him off.
Well, you said earlier in the week that Dave Brailsford told you that they should have killed the race before, and I mentioned Pogacar from as the stone in the shoe of Jumbo-Visma. They should have really kicked him away. I mean, as you do with a stone in the shoe, and. But once again, I think they've been too... It's still a learning process for Jumbo-Visma in a way, because they've been going up and up and up, but they've never been really in a position of leading the Tour. And if you look at Chris Froome's victories, most of them, he actually killed the race in the first climb, and what Nibali did as well in the 2014 Tour. That's probably maybe the mistake, or maybe just Roglic was not good enough to do that or strong enough to do that. But we had the impression in the first week he was holding back a little bit when they were so dominant, and what Van Aert nearly winning the stage in Auxerre. And maybe this first week was the moment when he should have, destroyed the rest of the field. It would have made a far less exciting Tour de France, but in the same time, they would probably have won the Tour.
Just another... it's interesting because, obviously, Pogacar has done it with really no team, and he hasn't needed a team because he's been able to surf the Jumbo-Visma train, as it were. You can almost see him kind of standing on top of the carriages, jumping from one to the other. He'll not be able to do that again, I don't think. That's going to be the challenge for him. He's not going to be able to, I don't know how they kill him off. I don't know how they could have killed him off, but I don't think he's going to find that quite so straightforward in the future. He's going to be a seriously marked man. But the other parallel with 89 is that it's similar in a way with Le Monde. I mean, Le Monde did it in 89 without a team. Le Mans did it in 89 without a team as well, and Vigneault had a strong team with Cyril Guimard at the helm.
Before we look forward to next year's Tour de France and whether, you know, UAE Team Emirates can support him, I mean, I think it's worth looking back at the way the race played out. After stage six, Pogacar was in third place, 4 seconds behind Roglic, and then on the following day, he was caught out with the crashes and the crosswinds on the stage to Lavar and lost 1:21. And then after the next kind of finishes and a stage win and the time bonuses, at the first rest day, had he not lost that 1:21, he would have been in ahead of Roglic overall. And you could make a case, I think a pretty good case, for saying that the thing that won Pogacar the Tour was losing that time, in a way, because it didn't put him in a position where either his team would have to do anything at all to ride on the front. I mean, they'd already done a day supporting Alexander Kristoff at the very start of the race, of course, in the yellow jersey. But his team had no work to do on the front. You know, the weaknesses in that team weren't exposed as ruthlessly as they might have been. And Pogacar then was coming from a position, you know, where he could just surf the wheels. And really, the only time he saw any little cracks was on the very, very steep finish to the Col de la Loze. And you're right, Roglic did not distance Pogacar throughout the whole of the tour, other than in the crosswind crash and a little bit on the Col de la Loze. So you can't really say that Pogacar doesn't deserve it, especially
I don't think anybody could say something like that.
But Jumbo-Visma's big mistake was that when they were strong, they did not make anything like the gains that they needed to make. And you're absolutely right, Rich. Sky in the past would turn a small advantage into a medium-sized advantage, into a big advantage, and they would pick, not necessarily, they don't pick a moment, but they would recognise a moment to really turn the screw. And Jumbo-Visma didn't do that during this race.
Well, Roglic didn't, because in the past, as you say, Jumbo-Visma did their job, but there was always a time when they set up Chris Froome or Nibali in 2014 to suddenly attack and you know, take 1:32 minutes, and that was it. I think maybe also Pogacar has made the best of the parcours and of the way the even in the last Vuelta, you know, it's become a kind of fashion in the past couple of five or six years for most Grand Tours to have this kind of stage, well, not flat stages, but bumpy stages with a finish at the top of a mountain, but not a high altitude mountain, just, you know, like Grand Colombier, Puy Marie, Montaigual, which are quite similar to Vuelta finishes, you know, and Pogacar is very good at this kind of effort, you know, following the trend, and all of a sudden producing his effort he showed it by winning these two stages in La Reims and Grand Colombier. This kind of course suits him. No time trial only a final one, but with a you know, mountain path with a. You can imagine. Well, it won't happen because Prudhomme doesn't like time trials. But with a 30k individual time trial or a team time trial in the Tour de France, like we had last year, I don't think Pogacar would have won the Tour.
He sounds of a guy who won the time trial today by about a minute and a half.
But it was not your classic time. I mean, a flat or reasonably flat time trial, you know, the Wiggins style, even Froome style or Dumoulin style, I don't think Pogacar would have won.
That's a very good point, though. I mean, if Jumbo-Visma could just wish into retrospective existence a nice 35-kilometre team time trial in the first week, they would have been home and hosed.
But one thing worth saying about Pogacar, he rode his first Grand Tour a year ago at the Vuelta. He was third there. And he did seem to get stronger as the race went on, and he won the equivalent stage with a 30-kilometer solo breakaway, which was extraordinary, really, with a tough climb up to the finish. It was a really extraordinary performance that day, and he's done it again at the end of the race. I remember speaking to Jeroen Swart, the doctor at UAE Team Emirates, that morning, and he was just talking about Pogacar's powers of recovery, and that he'd never seen anything like it. We're hoping to get a word with Jeroen tomorrow for tomorrow night's podcast, but I mean, yeah, I think the guy's kind of rewriting cycling in a way, and there are all these other talented young riders coming through, but Yeah, he seemed to be capable today of a performance that suggested he hadn't been riding for the last 3 weeks. You know, the energy of it, I thought was... because when he was up on Roglic in the early part, I feared that he was gambling, because he had a chance to try and win the Tour, but he had to do something absolutely incredible. And so he would go out as hard as possible and hope to hang on, was what I was thinking about the way that he was pacing it. And that was a potentially a very dangerous strategy on a time trial with such a hard finish. But when he got to the climb, he changed bikes. That went pretty smoothly. Roglic just didn't go so smoothly. And he danced up the climb. And he took, you know, huge gains on the climb itself.
That's what I'm saying. On those type of climbs, on this Tour de France, he was the best with Richie Porte, who also found his the right gear for this sort of effort. And the other thing, he himself mentioned genetics about the third week, and it's true that the key to be a Tour de France winner or Grand Tour winner is the ability to live through to the third week, and that's something obviously that Pogacar has a natural ability to do, which is not the case of other guys. Well, you know, the future, I don't know. I don't know. Once again, we believed last year, and even at the beginning of this Tour de France, despite, you know, all the problems, that Egan Bernal was still probably the leading favorite. And where is he now? I don't know. It's a tricky one.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for supporting Cycling Podcast, as they have done for so long now. If you want 25% off all your Science and Sport products, do remember to use the code SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com. Did you use any Science and Sport products this morning on our blistering bike ride, Lionel? I mean, you were...
It was just after breakfast, Rich.
So you were climbing like Rog today.
I was a bit, wasn't I? I was. Yeah.
Not really.
I did okay on the last.
You were going better. You're a lander, aren't you? You need it to be hard all day.
I'm a slow starter. I have no speed or endurance. But from around 45 minutes in to about an hour and a quarter in, I'm okay.
That's your sweet spot. The other odds and sods, I mean, we'll probably return to Pogacar and his team in particular. And look, he's under contract to the end of 2024. They certainly got money. They've put a lot of money probably into, you know, the likes of Gaviria and building a bit of a sprint train for him. You know, what will they do now? Will they bring in riders who can support? Will they try to build a team like Jumbo-Visma to support Pogacar?
You can probably count, as you said, on the money on Martin Fernandez and Mauro Giannetti, who are the team managers of this team.
It's a curious setup, isn't it? Because it's got sort of tentacles into the old Lamprey team, Giannetti.
Yeah, Sonia Duval, Machines. Remember?
Yeah, I mean, pretty sordid history in those guys' cases with Sonia Duval. Alan Piper is involved too. I mentioned Jeroen Swart, who is their head of medicine and worked for many years as a sort of physiologist, sports scientist, and very involved in anti-doping in South Africa as well.
But yeah, for now they have to create like an identity, really. I mean, and maybe Pogacar is the guy who will manage to, around him and around his talent, to build something that, you know, looks like a real project, like Jumbo-Visma is. For the time being, as you say, it's a gathering of talents, or how could I say, competencies, to try to be neutral, of different kind of people, and it's difficult to, but obviously they will need to do something different next season to defend the title, and it'll be interesting to watch.
Le vin du jour, à votre santé.
We're now at the penultimate stage of this year's Tour de France, where we've got a wine from the Cycling Podcast Yellow Jersey case, the Albert Mann Riesling from the Alsace, which, as the name would suggest, is 100% Riesling, made by an organic producer, doesn't add much sulfur, just enough to stabilize the wine, but giving off some lovely sort of, you know, herb, some fresh fruits, green herbs, things like quince. I get sort of a slightly underripe stone fruits, but with a really refreshing, spicy undertone that's a result of some of the minerality of the Alsace. Lovely wine, even with a yellow capsule. It's a perfect fitting to the penultimate day of the Tour de France. Hope you enjoy this one and look forward to the finale tomorrow.
So our wine of the day today was the Riesling. We actually had that a couple of days ago, didn't we? You're not a big fan of Riesling, Francois, but I am, and I love it, and it was very nice.
Yeah, it's like Chablis, you know. We have all of our the wines we love, and the grapes we love, and some others that for unknown reasons we don't like so much. And it's okay for me. It's okay with Chablis and Riesling. There are two white wines I find too acid to my taste. But I mean, I had a little bit of the Riesling the other day, and it was obviously excellent. But once again, this is a really personal taste, and generally speaking, I find the Riesling too acid to my taste.
Well, we ought to talk about the other ride of the day, really, which was Richie
from,
Port.
From Riesling to Port.
Oh, very good, very good. Richie Port on the podium in the Tour de France. I mean, he said in the press conference afterwards, an absolute dream for him. When you think back over his Grand Tour career and that breakthrough in 2010, the Giro d'Italia, when he got in that big break, didn't he, and finished seventh overall, that kind of propelled him into the category of potential Grand Tour contenders. Well, it was a long while before we really saw him deliver on that. He was fifth in the Tour in 2016, and well, that was really all there was to talk of in Port's Grand Tour career as an overall contender. Crashed out of a couple as well, and this year he's ridden the perfect race, hasn't he? Another rider who lost 1:21 in the crosswind stage on stage 7. Coincidentally, that was the day his daughter Eloise was born, and he talked in the press conference quite movingly about missing the birth. His wife Gemma was obviously at home giving birth, and he did say that she'd said to him before he went, you know, go to the Tour and, you know, do what you've got to do, but if I turn on the TV and see you at the back, I'll be a bit pissed off.
I mean, you know, had Port not lost that 1:20 in the crosswinds stage, he'd have been just over a minute behind Roglic. And again, playing that game that we were playing earlier about, you know, if we'd imagined that Roglic should finish 35 seconds behind Dumoulin, he wouldn't have lost the Tour. If at the start of the Tour you'd have said Roglic would only finish a minute in front of Richie Port, you wouldn't have thought he would win the Tour. Other than that day, Port did put the perfect race together, and he was there every day. And he really wasn't far off those two. For all that they appeared to be on a different level in this race, he was really pretty close to them.
Because I mean, he was, as I said before, in this Tour de France, he had no pressure like Pogacar. They were there in the leading group without teammates most of the time, having nothing to lose at all. No expectation, no team leading the way for them. Just, you know, just in great shape, in great form, and being able to surge when they wanted to do that. But let's face it, I'm very happy for Port. I think he deserves it. I mean, his career has been a long one. Now, I remember seeing him win the time trial in the Tour de Rome on I think it was his first major success as a rider a long time ago, and really impressive. I think he never liked the pressure of being a you know, team leader, and maybe the expectation, you know, on him to be a GC contender was a little bit too much for his persona and what he, you know, his temperament, the way he is. And this year, to see him on the podium is a real achievement. I asked him the question in the press conference. You know, he's won, well, as we know, Tour Down Under several times, Paris-Nice. I mean, some of the good, you know, and even some of the best races in the cycling calendar. This is not a victory, but you could tell he was seeing this as a kind of the crowning of a career. And as he said, you know, well, being on the podium in the Tour de France, the greatest race in the world, is something that will stay with you forever, and he deserved this kind of a crowning to a, well, let's face it, a very, very good career.
I definitely think there's something to that mental aspect for Richie Port. I mean, he said he was racing with a kind of freedom, knowing that this was his last chance to be the team leader in a Grand Tour. He's going to Team Ineos next year, where he will be more of a workhorse. And he also said in the press conference that with his wife giving birth to his second child, the team gave him the freedom that if he wanted to leave the race, he could, which, as he said, is quite an incredible thing. But again, it kind of frees him up. I can imagine that, freeing him up, thinking, well, I don't have to be here, but if I'm here, I might as well be here. And you see that. I think we've seen that in his racing. One little coincidence about the birth of his children. 2 years ago, his son Luca was born, and he had a couple of nights at home before he had to go to the Tour de Suisse, which he won. And this time, of course, he's missed the birth of his daughter, but will obviously be reunited when he gets home after the tour. So a lovely little story, that, really, and one that you can't, you know, you see the joy of Pogacar, the sorrow of Roglic, and then the joy of Richie Port, and you can't fail but feel happy for him, really, to see that he's achieved something that perhaps he thought that ship had sailed.
Great elegance in Richie Port all the time. I mean, in his behavior with us in press conferences, and I must say, because we you know, because we had this press conference where they followed one another, Richie and then Pogacar and then Roglic. I found Roglic, and we hardly mentioned him, you know, because Pogacar was so. I found you said gracious, and I agree. I found Roglic very elegant in defeat, and he showed his human side a little bit. I mean, there was something missing, probably, in the way he rode this Tour de France without showing any sign of weakness or emotion. And he didn't show lots of emotion in the press conference, but you could. There was something, you know, very graceful in a way in the way he handled all that. And I wasn't a great Roglic fan at the beginning of this tour, and I'm much more a fan of him of his now. But I mean, that's probably the French romanticism,
well,
you know.
But you know, I think Bernal as well came out of this tour with great credit for the way that he handled his disappointment. You know, Roglic was asked the inevitable question, what next? You know, will you come back and try and win the Tour? Will you race again this year? And I got a real sense there of a need on his part to really take a proper break now. And he wasn't ready to make any kind of commitments at all. And this, you know, we talk about in cycling, sometimes riders suffer devastating defeats, and it really is a hard thing to recover from, and it can even define a career. You know, Roglic might not have too many more chances, and it might be that this was as close as he will ever get to winning the Tour. I mean, I thought also in Dumoulin's performance today, there were signs that he's on the way back. You know, this is the end of a Grand Tour. I thought he was going to win the time trial. He's going to go to the Vuelta. He may well win the Vuelta, and next year, if you're Jumbo-Visma, what do you do? Do you support Dumoulin or do you support Roglic? Or do you come in with both of them? And that's the one thing that maybe scuppered them. They didn't have two. If they'd had two guys in a race-winning position, that would have been how they could have killed off Pogacar. But Dumoulin kind of took himself out of the reckoning early on because he didn't think he had the legs. And he may well have been right, but his form today suggested that he was getting a bit stronger as the race went on.
We said that at the time, didn't we, that it was a puzzling one, that Dumoulin would make that big effort and then swing over. And I mean, he didn't lose that much time, but he lost enough to just nudge him out of the real sharp end. And that did seem a strange one at the time, and it seems an even stranger one now because, as you say, in the other mountain stages, they didn't have the benefit of having, you know, two punches to land on Pogacar. You know, you could have, if Dumoulin had been closer, you could have sent Dumoulin on the attack. You know, somebody might have, it might have teased somebody else out, thinking, well, my podium spot's under pressure now.
Less than 2 minutes from fourth overall in the end.
Exactly.
Well,
so
you never know. Maybe next year the team leader will be neither Roglic or Dumoulin. It might be Wout van Aert. Who knows?
Well, one rider who sadly won't make it to Paris is Lukas Postelberger, who's been keeping an audio diary for us, one of nine riders, and one of two who won't be in Paris. Sam Bewley is the other one. He crashed out early on. Lukas Postelberger had a bee or wasp thing in his mouth And I saw a picture today of him lying flat out on the ground after that happened. We saw the medical treatment from the car, but it was obviously pretty nasty. However, that didn't stop him sending in a final diary entry from ICU in hospital.
Morning, boys. I'm still here in the hospital in the ICU. Not a great view, actually, but this is life. Yeah, I had a sting from a bee or wasp or something related. It was pretty big in my mouth. And I had a reaction 2 years ago in Australia to a similar animal or something. I couldn't see it there either. It was during training. But, well, I had an allergic test in between already and was all negative. So must be kind of reaction with the high load of training and fatigue and then maybe reacting to the sting, pretty intense. Yeah, I was taken to a hospital and kept here. And yeah, we will see what the doctor's saying. I feel quite okay, actually. I mean, I'm really tired and yeah. I just almost finished the tour, almost. It's pretty bad to leave the race in such a unpredictable way. I would like to see Paris, but yeah, this is also cycling, happens. I'll be back, of course, a few days time, 4 weeks maybe. We will see. But season is still going. And we have to focus on new goals. And yeah, it was a pleasure to talk to you. It was not that much, actually, as I expected, but the tour was really hard. And there was not much to think about because there was always something coming up. And well, anyway, pleasure and keep things going, guys.
Well, I suppose it's an occupational hazard, isn't it? Flies and wasps and bees are outside in the air. And, I mean, we know from riding bikes ourselves that you sometimes swallow things that you'd much rather not. And I guess it's a... No?
Do you yeah, not? I got stung on my head recently by a wasp, actually. It flew into my helmet and I ripped it off as quickly as I could and threw it away. But I got stung on the head.
Yeah. I wonder, it's always interested me that how often riders get stung or swallow flies. Or I mean, when I swallow a fly, I'm always like, I have to slow down and drink some water and I'm coughing and spluttering. But they just seem to carry on.
Well, indeed. Well, thanks, Lucas, anyway, for keeping us posted, get it, over the last few weeks about your tour and for sending us in a final entry from your hospital bed. That is above and beyond, and we're very appreciative. And you will be getting a lovely Stacey Snyder mug. And speaking of them, she's also created a one-off Pedaleur de Charme mug and a Pedaleuse de Charme mug for the Giro Rosa. But the Pedaleur de Charme mug, well, we ran four Twitter polls today to produce four finalists for tomorrow. And the winners of the polls are Mark Hershey ahead of Richard Carapaz and Benoit Cosnefroy, Sam Bennett ahead of Nicholas Roach and Jens Debusschere, Nielsen Paulus narrowly ahead of Mads Pedersen and Kevin Reza, Richie Port ahead of Wout van Aert and Sepp Kuss. So the finalists are Richie Port, Nielsen Paulus, Sam Bennett and Mark Hershey. I've got a feeling Mark Hershey will win.
Wow.
But we'll see.
We thought that Primoz Roglic was going to win.
Well, he was named the hyper combative of the
most attacking rider of the Tour de France, indeed. Well, listen, let's wrap up for tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with, I'm sure, lots more Pogacar. I think we're digesting our lamb kebabs here, but also the fact that we've seen today a performance that you say, Francois, is the best you've ever seen. And I think we're all kind of just getting our heads around that, aren't we? That today we saw something truly exceptional. It was, you know, I was in Beijing in 2008 when Usain Bolt, at the age of a very similar age actually, won the 100 meters in a world record. And you're, you know, there's a sort of
I was there too.
You were there too. Yeah. But there's a sense of, you know, just trying to get your head around what you've just seen and what it means, and understanding that it will rank alongside those performances that you really consider to be up there as the greatest ever. So, anyway.
Well, maybe it will have sunk in a bit more by the time we reach Paris tomorrow afternoon.
Indeed. Well, let's head to Paris, chaps. Let's go.
Yeah, what's on offer? I mean, this tour has been exciting, sometimes different from what we expected. So maybe no bunch sprint tomorrow, who knows?
Oh, you know what, Francois, that's not a bad shout. Given the way that teams have approached this race, the fact that, you know, there are teams that will not want a bunch sprint.
Well, you asked Richie Porte whether Mads Pedersen would, you know, be going
well,
for tomorrow.
I was sort of thinking back to Bradley Wiggins leading out Mark Cavendish in 2012, and Richie Porte has been fulsome in his praise for Mads Pedersen and the job, the bodyguard, he calls him. He's done an incredible job for him. Mads Pedersen really wants to win on the Champs-Élysées last race in Rainbow Jersey. So I asked Richie Porte whether he would try to help him. And I said, what could he do to help him? He said, get out of the way.
Honest. Very honest.
Very funny.
No,
yeah.
I think if Mads Pedersen's going to win on the Champs-Élysées, he's going to have to take a flyer and do it sort of a la Cancellara.
Do you think? Or a bunch sprint. But oh. I like the image of Richie Porte doing a lead out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's got a chance in a bunch sprint. I think he's got a better chance if he took a flyer in the last K.
Yeah.
But we'll see tomorrow.
We'll see.
Well, it's interesting.
Well, man, you Pogacar is so strong. Pogacar's
going
to win.
He's going to lap them. He's going to lap the field. Right, that's all for now. Thank you, Francois.
Thanks.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thanks, Rich.